Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Being expert. Mike, the Steelers are the last AFC team to report to training camp this year. That's a week from today. What would be your thoughts on a TJ Watt holdout? We've seen Le'Veon Bell skip camp, but he wasn't under contract. We've seen guys who were rookies not report, Rod Woodson, but we have not seen somebody under contract do something like that, pull a stunt like that with the Steelers in a very, very, very long time.
You're reminding me of something that I've been meaning to refresh my memory about. There is a common misconception that any player who is operating under any contract other than his rookie contract, if he holds out, the daily fines, $40,000 per day, cannot be waived by the team. Because, for example, the year Hines Ward held out, fines rack up, they work out a deal, fines go away. Just don't tell people the fines went away, wink, wink, nod, nod. You can't do that anymore. And the belief is that a guy like TJ Watt couldn't have his fines waived because it can rack up to a huge pile of money and it becomes a potential issue. I think the way the CBA is written, it won't apply to TJ Watt. Now, look, we're talking about $40 million per year here, not $40,000 a day, but it's just one of those little things that could make it easier for him to hold out. Because to the extent that for others, like for Trey Hendrickson, it definitely would be $40,000 a day because he did sign his contract as a free agent. It wasn't a renewal of an existing deal that was signed as a rookie. That's the subtle difference, but I think that's what the CBA says. Trey Hendrickson's going to lose that $40,000 and it's non-waivable per day. TJ Watt, he could say, you know what, when we work this out, they'll waive it because they can. It's just something to keep in mind. Because I know everybody thinks, oh, no, veteran players are never going to hold out again. I don't think that's an impediment for TJ Watt. And I think a holdout is far more likely this time than it was back in 21 when they had that kind of everyone's on the same page. He's going to show up, but he's not going to practice until he has his deal.
Mike, as this has, this whole process has kind of, I won't say dragged on because we all assumed it would take a while here and that it wouldn't be resolved even at this point. But are you getting a better sense as to how you think it will be resolved right now than maybe you had 2 weeks ago? Like, are you getting a more pessimistic sense that Watt is even angrier than we think? Just wanted to get what you felt like was the latest on this from your perspective.
I thought the stuff that Mark Caboli said last Friday on your show, and he recharacterized it to a certain extent on his Twitter page, but he left a little sweet spot in there. The Steelers aren't shopping TJ Watt, but they're doing their due diligence to see what the trade market for him would be. What would, hypothetically. And that's kind of the toe in the water, right? You're finding out, and if you hear that someone's willing to give up, hypothetically, a lot more than you thought, maybe that changes your view. I keep going back to the report from NFL Media, they have no intention to trade him. Imagine if the Chiefs would say we have no intention to trade Patrick Mahomes. No, they'd say, are you crazy? We're not trading Patrick Mahomes. So the door is at least cracked. And maybe they're cracking it a little bit more just to see. And that becomes, I think also, like anytime you got a big decision to make, you need to know all your options. And I think TJ Watt needs to know, for example, hey man, they're not going to pay you what you want and give us what we want. So don't even think about going down that path. So more information in a situation like this is good. But also, once you start down a certain path, sometimes momentum can take on a life of its own. And the next thing you know, they have a trade offer that maybe they'll take.
Mike, do the Steelers strike you as the organization, even though they've changed some of their ways of doing business, would the skipping of training camp, because Tomlin brought that up with Aaron Rodgers, where, okay, this is where the season really starts. I'm not going to worry about OTAs. I'm not going to worry about him being signed for minicamp, even though he ended up showing up for minicamp. He said at the owners' meetings, it really begins at training camp. If Watt does hold out and starts to miss days of training camp, could you see organizationally their attitude towards the player shifting?
Probably not, because in 2021, he was there and he wasn't practicing, but he was there. I think teams have recognized there's value in having what they call a hold-in now, where the guy's there and he doesn't practice and everybody understands why he's not. Because once you show up, it's virtually impossible under the collective bargaining agreement to leave. What if you don't show up, you have a lot more leverage than if you show up and try to leave. So we're in. At some point, this guy's going to play. At some point, we're going to get a deal done, or we're going to tell him, you got to get your hat. Let's go to work. It's time. So I think that it is different but similar. He's not practicing, but he's not. I think it puts more pressure on the team because, yeah, they don't have him on the practice field, but they also don't have him in the building. And not having him in the building, I think, is going to make people very, very nervous.
Yeah, there's not the impression that everything's ultimately hunky-dory at the last, you know, when it comes right down to it, and they'll get it worked out. Mike, what I want to know is if you're hearing anything, like, because I've seen these reports. I think they've been talked about on this show maybe while I was on vacation last week for a little bit, but that there are real questions on the Steelers' side about the way Watt specifically ended the season and then that playoff game where he was invisible in the playoff game, tapered off dramatically. To what extent do you think that's real and that this isn't just about the amount of money he wants? It's also about what they think he is as a player going forward.
Well, and here's the reality, and this is one of the tension points when it comes to the injury report.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, sometimes teams like to conceal, downplay the extent to which a guy's injured. And that can make a player look like he's declining. And I'm not suggesting the Steelers were hiding any injuries. And I haven't even looked at TJ Watt's injury report for late in the year. But my point is, you know, maybe it was wear and tear. Maybe he was banged up. Jordan Love had a down year last year. Well, he was hurt all year long too. So I'm not sure. And the Steelers are in a better position to know. But this gets back to what we talked about last week. The deal that they do, if they do one, the structure is going to be so critical because for the Steelers, the question is, when can we escape a bad deal? When can we say, nope, he's no longer playing up to this standard. We're going to move on. So they have all that information. And I think that is one of the big points to go. The APY, fine. The structure. Are we tied in for 1 year? Are we tied in for 2 years? And I'd be stunned if they're tied in for 3 years.
Mike, I had someone who worked in the NFL bring this up to me after we talked last week, and I wanted to get your thought on it, and it just popped back into my head. So you brought this up, and this is, I'm not going to make this too in the weeds. TJ Watt is rep by a company called CAA. They're one of the biggest agencies in the world. Jimmy Sexton's his agent. He's like
Jimmy Sexton, RJ Gonsner. Yeah.
Yes, it's like a huge, maybe another guy, huge power agency. Myles Garrett is rep by Rich Paul, LeBron's guy. And someone articulated to me basically, look, there's a urinating match that goes on between these two agencies. There is no way CAA is going to let Watt basically run back into Rooney's office this year and take less money than Garrett because of the war between... All right, another EAS test, or not test, alert because of bad weather. We're joined by Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, brought to you by Goodrich and Geist. Get the good guys, Goodrich and Geist. Mike, just picking up on that question, basically Garrett and Watt are rep by two different huge agencies and how that might factor into the contract Watt takes.
You're absolutely right. And there is intense competition among agents. Agents should cooperate and collude. A couple of weeks ago, when you were off, Pony, we talked about that collusion case where the NFL got caught with its hand in the cookie jar. Agents are allowed to do it. Players are allowed to do it. but agents from different firms don't want to work together. They're in competition. I'll give you a quick example. Athletes First, which is another one of the big agencies, they represent both Jordan Love and Tua Tagovailoa. And last year, they played the Dolphins and the Packers against each other with both of those guys coordinating and getting both of them $55 million a year when at least one of them has no business getting $55 million a year, but in my opinion. But that's what can happen if, let's say, CAA had both Garrett and Watt.
Exactly.
You could package them together.
Right.
Now to add another wrinkle to this, Athletes First has Micah Parsons.
And the thing I heard was CAA, which is this massive agency, they're going to look really bad if Watt takes less than Garrett, and they don't want that.
They all use things like that in recruiting for new clients.
Yep.
That's so much of the game. That's why, you know, when you see the initial reports of what a deal is worth from the usual suspects, Schefter, Rappaport, Garofalo, Pelissero, yada, 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 it's always the most inflated number that the agents give to them because they want that to be the first thing that is used to parlay that deal into new clients. It's all about taking what you've done now and using it to get new clients. So if CAA falls short of Miles Garrett's $40 million a year, then that gets used against CAA. That's why they could do 40.1, and there's a way to do it. You can put some bullcrap back end years. I could write the thing in 5 minutes. They would get into 40.1. The key is the Steelers having the option to bail after 1 year and at the latest after 2 years.
Mike, since Pony brought it up and you've expounded on it with these agent inter-agency battles, could there be a stare down between CAA and Athletes First as to which of those two big time clients signs first? I know Parsons is a lot younger, and so it would stand to reason he's going to get more or whatever, but would they maybe not want to have their guy sign first because then the next agency can just jump in and sign for more?
If I'm Athletes First,
All right, so that's a big one. Flash flood warning for Pittsburgh and a lot of surrounding areas east of the city. Mike Florio with us. You heard Melzi's question about the Parsons and Watt wanting to wait on a deal. Mike, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I think that from Parsons' perspective, I definitely would like to see Watt go first. I don't want to run the risk of Parsons doing a deal and then Watt jumping in, unless Parsons is going to get $45 million or more per year, which he could, which he could. But if this is just the old, you know, the old thing where you put your hand on top of each other, working your way up the bat.
Like, yeah, of course.
Miles Garrett's 40 and Parsons is 40.1. I'd be nervous about TJ Watt coming in at 40.2. But I think that Parsons is going to be so much more. Remember we talked a week or two ago about the Steelers thinking Garrett's deal's an aberration. And
yes.
I said, just wait till Parsons' deal comes in. So I think from Parsons' perspective, he's going to get so much, I believe, that it's not going to matter. And I think from Watt's perspective, yeah, let me see what Parsons can get. Because that just makes my argument for at least 40, at least more than Miles Garrett, more plausible if Parsons gets 45.
Mike, let me get you out on this one. McLaurin and Jennings, do you think either one or neither of those guys gets traded?
I think probably neither get traded. I saw that Jennings is going to show up. Again, that's the worst thing you can do if you really want to take a stand. You show up, you lose your leverage. And I don't think the 49ers are going to do anything with his contract. He did a deal that ended up being a bad deal for him because he's a better player than the numbers suggest. Now, maybe they'll fix it, but I don't see him trading him. And with McLaurin and the Commanders, I just think it's a matter of time before they work out a deal. He's due to make $15 million this year. He clearly needs more. The question is, what's the right number?
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, PFT Live. Check him out. Thank you, Mike. We'll talk next week.
See you, guys.
There
Thank
you go. Text us on the Edgar Snyder Associates fan text line, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Thank you to Mike for bearing with us during those emergency alert system warnings. Turn around, don't drown. It's very good advice.
Yeah, don't try.
I got caught in a flash flood once, and the water went into my car. That's
really?
A true story in Robinson. Yep.
A lot of weird... We live pretty high up in the Appalachian Mountains here. A lot of weird places in the area, though, where you can get caught.
Yeah. Car, like, was basically fried, and they didn't want to total it, so it was in the shop for, like, 8 months.
8 months?
Yeah, man.
Why
true
didn't
story.
They want to total it?
I don't know. I'm not, like, privy to how all these insurance games work.
So this is when you already lived here,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, this is probably
here.
Going back maybe 13 years.
Oh, man, the early days of Pony.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, I'm just saying, the early days. You had longer hair.
Yeah, but you said it in a tone where you're like, man, that guy was a disgrace.
No, that's how it came off. No, absolutely not. It was more before the band was famous.
That's what I heard.
Before the band was famous. I mean, you're going to be a big TV star one of these days very soon.
All right.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.